the last part of the book all happens at Christmas. And
Yeah.
as soon as I read it was Christmas, I was like, oh God.
Well, I'm glad you say that, Craig, because I was saying, I can't do this. Tell me why you thought, oh God, at Christmas, and then I'll say, and then I'll know what to say. Go on, why?
Because Christmas brings out the worst in every family.
Okay.
It just does.
Yeah, well, this Christmas is going to be a doozy, as one character says, because they're all going to come home. Rosalind decides that they've left her. She's going to sell the house. They don't deserve any better. And she tells them all she's going to sell the house and they better come home. And so they do. And I did resist the whole idea of Christmas. I said, I can't have it all happen at Christmas. I really swerved for the longest time. I was saying it to my husband. I was saying, he said, well, just, cut from Christmas to Easter or something. Then I sat down to the Christmas dinner, as it were, and started writing it, and it all happened at the Christmas dinner. It's like families work in patterns, and they establish those patterns, and they label each other. And that's the thing about these characters, they come back, and we know an awful lot about them, actually. We've been with them, we've lived with them for a while, and so we know more about them than their brothers and sisters do. So when they speak, we know who's talking and what they carry with them. But yes, we lapse back into these atavistic patterns, and we label each other. And Rosaline is the cause of a lot of that because she has favorites. She talks about her children behind their backs. She is, she isn't the one to make it all fair and make it all easy for everyone. That's
And
not
she
her
talks,
mode.
yeah, and she talks to each of them about the others.
She does. I mean, I put a lot of research into Rosaline. I was stalking her for a long time. And I was on the internet, on these websites where people were complaining about their parents and the things that they did. And so this is how I started to realize Rosaline. In our house, when I grew up, there was a rule that that one child would not be discussed with the other child, which is a great rule. It's a kind of respect, a kind of privacy. But Rosaline does entirely the opposite. She goes around, she says, I'm very worried about Dan. Do you think he's gay? And I'm very worried. And she goes around behind their backs and drives them nuts. Nuts. Because she won't talk to you directly about it. And all the things she's worried about are slightly shameful. It's all about, money, alcohol, gay or straight, or sex, all these things that they're slightly unmentionable. So she sort of keeps moving around these subjects, driving, looking for reassurance, looking also to keep them. It's a to worry about a child is to have them in your mind all the time. It's a way of holding on to your child.
There really is a green road, and it really is green.
The Green Road is a real road on the west of coast of County Clare, in the beautiful Burren, which is that limestone, stone walls, stony fields landscape that from the tourist posters. And it was with some trepidation that I decided that that was fine. I could write about this place too. My father grew up down the coast. I used to go out for walks on this green road, and it's the most beautiful place in the world. And there's no gainsaying it. It just is fantastically beautiful. You look out towards the Aran Islands up to Galway Bay. And it's green because it's unpaved. And there are many green roads in the Burn, but this is known as the Green Road. And Rosaline goes up there after Christmas dinner for her constitutional, for her walk. And I was nervous about setting the book exactly there, even though I was writing the book exactly there. I was setting it like 3 fields away from where I was writing it, because we had a little holiday rental there. Because that scenery has been so written about by Yeats and Lady Gregory and Synge, Seamus Heaney, Michael Longley, all these marvelous, wonderful writers have made it more lyrical. In the early days, it was made into this lyrical, lovely, this was when poverty became lovely in Ireland, and the peasant was the noble peasant. And it was all fairies and you might say leprechauns, but there was a lot of hooey talked, which was very useful hooey because it gave the Irish a pride in their culture. And it was very much part of how Ireland was established, was through this Celtic Twilight nonsense, which is beautiful, beautiful nonsense. Yeats, I mean, beautiful nonsense. And that place has been visited and revisited by satirized McDonough, Flann O'Brien, by so many writers. And it was only when I was up there myself and I said, well, actually, these stones are real. They're under my feet. This view is there, that it isn't in a book. And I can have it for 2 minutes. Thank you. I'll do this too.
Structurally, it is four books.
Or five.
Could
be five.
Four, and then yeah. The fifth book is the amalgam.
Yeah, I mean, they are almost like little separate novels. And it's the most conventional book I've written, but I don't think I could have come at it without writing my early, quite, I think the word is postmodern, work. Because I don't write like a 19th century writer. I don't write in a world where everything is known and everything is somehow safe. As I say, I like to break it up and I like to juxtapose. That's one of the things I've always done, is to put one thing up against another. So it's like each of those children is a separate planet. I mean, they're human beings, they're unknowable to each other and sometimes even to themselves. But they have their own language, almost. Close, but not exactly the same.
The book is The Green Road. I've been speaking with the author, Anne Enright, and The Green Road, the novel, is published by McClelland and Stewart.